Support for Shiro's comes from Yet Brock Records, celebrating the new album from Aoife O'Donovan, All My Friends, available everywhere. See her live on her 2024 tour starting in May.
I want to say to women, empower yourself with words and with beauty and with acceptance and compassion. And I know all of that sounds woo-woo, but at the end of the day, what we model is where our power is. What we model as feminists who stand up and say, my power is not in my looks, it's not in my body. It is the art that I'm putting out. It is the experience that I'm documenting that all of us are experiencing. And I can do that. I'm 62. I can continue to do that. I have to be okay with only a small percentage of people hearing it, as opposed to the old days when the record would come out and we'd sell 3-4 million, you know. It's disappointing, obviously, but it is the nature of all things now. We're so hypercritical about how women look. We put so much emphasis and so much power and also so much money into the influence of women who are perfect and beautiful and who wield that. I will forever have questions about where does it fit into the feminist movement. Those are questions I can't answer, but I can observe and I can write about it.
That was Sheryl Crow, and this is Shiro's, a podcast with a mission. To turn up the volume of women's voices in music across genres and generations, Shiro's is a deep dive into the experiences and perspectives of women and gender-expansive folks in a still overwhelmingly male-dominated music industry. It's a space where we discuss challenges and triumphs, how far we've come, and how far we still have to go. Telling our stories is the first step to making music better for everyone. I'm Carmel Holt. Back in 2019, the multi-Grammy-winning artist, producer, multi-instrumentalist, and all-around icon, Sheryl Crow, put out her 11th studio album called Threads. It was intended to be her final album and a celebration of all of her musical sheroes and heroes, as well as a spotlight on newer artists who she sees as lighting the way of the future. But a creative force like Sheryl Crow, who has always been an activist and someone who's paved the way for so many others, couldn't stay away from the studio for too long. Thankfully, the pause felt even shorter with the release of a 2022 documentary called Sheryl. And then in 2023, the year that also marked the 30th anniversary of her debut Tuesday Night Music Club, and just before being inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, Sheryl Crow announced her upcoming new album called Evolution. In today's conversation, we'll hear why Sheryl turned the production reins over to someone else for the first time since her debut, why she feels it's important to work with and uplift other women, and how, at 62, she has more to say and is more inspired than ever to write music. I'm so thrilled to help celebrate the release of Evolution this week and welcome Sheryl Crow as this week's Shiro in the Spotlight. Sheryl Crow, Shiro of Shiros, welcome to Shiros. I am so honored and thrilled to have you here.
Thank you. It's nice to be here on Shiros. I love the name of it. It's great.
Thank you. I like it too. Congratulations on Evolution. We are all so very excited because you had said that Threads might be the end, and lo and behold, it wasn't. We should have known better,
I know.
Really.
I just don't trust what comes out of my own mouth. Yes, and I do still feel the same about making records. The fact that I've had a whole life built around albums. I mean, I grew up on albums. Albums made me want to do my own albums. I started producing myself and creating albums, which to me, like, I have a beginning, a middle, and an end. It takes you on a journey. And then now with technology, obviously, and streaming, you put a whole body of work out, and then you have songs that appear on playlists with people you've never even heard of. So after the last record, I thought, you know, Threads is a great bookend to like a 35-year career. And I'll just put songs out after this. But this record, I wound up having enough for an EP, and I thought, well, shoot, I'll just write two more songs and we'll just make it a record. So that's what I did.
So this process began with the title track, as I understand it, right?
It did, yeah. So the album, which is called Evolution, started out with a song that I just wrote on guitar. had my engineer sitting right here. I just said, you know, put this down. So I played this song, and it was about my concern over artificial intelligence. Now, years and years and years ago, I can remember when I was out touring on the global warming tour with Lori David during the Inconvenient Truth. We were going to colleges and talking about the environment. Stephen Hawking came out and said, it won't be the environment that is the undoing of civilization. It will be artificial intelligence. And I'm like, what is that? What's artificial intelligence? And now we're here. And just seeing how it's going to affect us as artists, being able to download somebody's voice onto your demo, being able to put a full special out using George Carlin, who's dead, who's been dead since 2006, even bringing back John Lennon. I've just been feeling like, you know, it's a slippery slope. And when we're at a point where already the algorithms just feed to us what we already believe, then where will we find the truth? So I wrote a song about it, was like, what do I do with this song? I called my friend, who's a great producer named Mike Elizondo, who's, you know, been at the helm of so many amazing careers, and said, what do you think about this? And he's like, I want to produce it. And then I just kept feeding him little demos, and he would just create these incredible movies around my little demos. And that's how I wound up with the album.
Let's hear a little clip of this here. And the guitar solo features Tom Morello.
Yes, I've known Tom for years. You know, I've been at different fundraising, different boycott lines. We both are very cause-oriented. This song, the way that Mike approached it was, the track feels terrifying and embracing, just like AI is. And we're like, who should we get to play the solo? Well, it turns out that Rage Against the Machine and I were being inducted into the Hall of Fame. He's like, what about getting Tom Morello? And he blew it out of the water. I mean, if anybody can take it to an outer space place, it's Tom Morello. And he just killed it.
Where are we headed in this paradise? We are passengers and there's no one at the wheel. No matter how well you can outdo me, there is one thing you will never do, and it's feel.
That's Evolution. It falls right in the middle of the new album by the same name by Sheryl Crow, who's our guest today on Shiro's. And I'm Carmel Holt. We were talking about the genesis of this album, and you mentioned that you teamed up with Mike Elizondo. His name has been mentioned so many times on this show, I'm happy to report. He's worked with lots and lots of guests that have been with women, especially who have many great things to say about him. You yourself are a producer and have produced the majority or co-produced the majority of your albums throughout your career. I wanted to talk a little bit about that because that's something that comes up a lot on this show. At the very end, we'll do an exercise called the Shiro's Magic Wand, where I ask my guests to imagine that they hold the power to change anything in the music industry. And very, very often, it comes up that we don't have enough choices when it comes to tech, to engineering, to crews, to producers, and that the lists come in and that they're mostly middle-aged white guys mostly. And, you know, we want to see more choices. So as somebody that has made a lot of those choices for yourself and taken the helm, talk to us about, first of all, your decision to hire an outside producer and what your experience has been along these three decades.
Well, my earliest beginnings of producing myself were just my doing my demos. And my first album that came out, Tuesday Night Music Club, I worked with Bill Bottrell, who's an amazing producer. And that record was highly successful. So to follow it up, we went into the studio and Bill wound up needing to leave. I wound up telling my manager, look, I'm not sure what to do. And he's like, you produce yourself. That's what you've always done. Just do it. And I produced the second record, which ultimately became a really big success. But at that point, there weren't record labels that were encouraging any women to produce themselves. In fact, I could safely say there was only one or two well-known female engineers, one of which Susan Rogers worked with Prince. It just wasn't done, you know? You didn't have the support of record labels, which were predominantly run by men. The agents were men. The promoters were men. The radio programmers were men. Women just went in, sang songs, and wore cute clothes, you know? And because that record became successful, it gave me the opportunity and a lot of other women the opportunity to go in and produce themselves, to say, look, I know what I'm doing, and I'm the best representative of my art, so I'm going to do this. After Threads, I felt like, okay, I felt differently about record making. And with this particular body of work, I didn't want to hear what I had done in the past. I wanted somebody to blow my mind, and I knew I wasn't going to be able to blow my mind because I know what I do, right? So yes, I've known Mike for 24 years, I guess. Just to shine a light on him for a minute, you know, he was there in the early beginnings of Dr. Dre and Eminem. I mean, he was on all of that stuff, and he's gone on to do, I mean, stuff you wouldn't line up with Dr. Dre and Eminem, like Carrie Underwood and Brothers Osborne. And I mean, so many amazing, artistic, beautiful records. He just did
Lake Street Dive.
Yes.
Yes.
And he's an amazing musician, but he's also just an amazing human being. So I had this experience where I kept feeling like I was supposed to work with him, and I was supposed to do this song by Peter Gabriel called Digging in the Dirt. And so I called him, and it's like, I don't know why this keeps coming up. I turn on my headphones, and Digging in the Dirt's playing. I dreamt the other night we were working on it. And so I'm like, I'm calling you and saying we need to do this. We did finally do it, and Peter Gabriel is on it. So it's coming out on the digital release of this record, March 29th. But just the whole album has felt like, it's felt really sacred to me. Like I literally gave him a piano vocal and a guitar vocal. I mean, that's all. I would feed those to him and he would build around that. And then I would just go in and watch the movie, you know, just listen to this incredible cinematic explosion. And it was really, really fun.
That sounds amazing. And so in a way, kind of relaxing.
It was very liberating. I mean, I will say, you know, at first I was like, oh, wow. First thing I heard was Evolution, and I was like, oh, it doesn't sound like what I do. And then I sat back and went, yes, it does not. It sounds like what the song does. It sounds like what the song means and how it should feel. I gave him a song called Broken Record, which is really an angsty. It comes from my own anger at how we treat each other on social media, particularly how I was treated after speaking out about the shooting here in Nashville. And I played it for some people, like in my band, and my co-writer, Jeff, who I didn't write the song with, I said, I wrote this song. What do you think? And he's like, ah, you know, it made him uncomfortable. I sent it to Mike and Mike's like, oh, let me have that. So, you know, it just felt like, I felt like I was just like on this beautiful raft in the middle of the ocean.
Since you mentioned Broken Record, I'm going to go to a clip of it right here. Is there anything else you want to tell us about the song or the making of the song or the writing of the song?
Yeah, I mean, I think I wrote the song in 10 minutes. It was in response to what I saw on social media regarding me and regarding also the shooting. And, you know, I'm not a person that says everybody needs to like turn all their guns in. I'm just a person that says, can we just figure out how to meet in the middle and talk about ways to make our kids' lives safer, ways to make the people in Kansas City safer. You know, if everybody has a gun, we're going to start solving our problems with guns, right? And I got a lot of really negative, nasty comments, which I don't generally read. And I had to reflect on what my mom has always said to me since I was little. It's just as easy to be nice as it is to be a jerk. And that's what the song is about. You know, it's like the whole thing is about, we can disagree and still be friends. We can disagree and still have respect for each other. And so I wrote the song. I mean, it's just like a knee-jerk response to that emotion.
Anger sucks, but at least your brand's trending. Dude, you must get tired. Well, we were buds, but now I'm unfriending. That's not how I'm wired.
We have Sheryl Crow with us on Shiro's. The new album is Evolution, and that's track 8 called Broken Record. I'm Carmel Holt, and going into the song, you were explaining how you wanted to speak your truth about, you know, what was going on, about gun violence and the shooting in particular in Nashville. Speaking out and speaking the truth, being authentic, has been a through line throughout your career. And I heard you say, or read that you said somewhere, that you're more inspired now than ever to write. So I wanted to explore that with you a little bit, and also just mirror back. I'm so happy that you feel that way, because we need to hear perspectives from women throughout their decades.
Well, I mean, I love my job, but also my job is a lifeline for me. You know, it's something that since I was a kid, I have relied on to give myself some sort of understanding of my own experience. The beautiful thing about songwriting, the beautiful thing about art in general, is that it includes everybody who's having a similar experience. For me, as a mom and raising kids in a time that even I can't understand, I find that writing about it is the healthiest way for me. And also, I just feel inspired. You know, I feel inspired to write about what it means to be alive and to be human, to hold emotion. You know, there's a song on the record called Where, and the whole idea is that if we become desensitized, then how do we continue to care about things? You know, if we are unable to feel anything other than anger, then how are we going to be able to hold the feeling of caring? And there's just so many things I feel like a lot of people are relating to right now. You know, it's even something as simple as an alarm clock. For me, I get up at 6 a.m, and I hate my freaking alarm clock because it's the most violent way to wake up, having a phone scream at me that it's time to get up, you know? There's just so many things to write about that are fun, but that are also heavy, that are deep, that are based in curiosity, that are introspective. That's the human experience, right? From relationships and the challenges of those to what's happening in the world and how it affects all of us. And what a great way to sort of try to make sense of it, to be able to use music to do that, which is a very physical experience, I find.
Where it was co-written with Bill Bottrell, who you've worked with from the very beginning, and this sees you reuniting with him. And it was interesting because I went back to Detours, which was, I believe, the last time, right? Was that the last time that you two
That's the last
together?
Time I worked with Bill. My 16-year-old was 3 months old. That record also asked a lot of questions. We'd just gone into Iraq after 9/11, and I find myself with this little child, and we're looking at the climate. And, of course, these are early days when people are really talking about the climate, and we've gone into this war. So it mirrors that. But what's interesting about that song is that that song I wrote with him during Detours, and we never did anything with it. Actually, we wrote it after Detours. And I came back to it because I felt like this is something I feel like I want to say now. I didn't feel like saying it then, but I do want to say it now. And so I sent it to Mike. And once again, he took just my little guitar vocal demo and beautified it.
Waters rise up on the freeway while little hands are clapping in the snow. And in the tree there lives a blackbird singing songs not meant for anyone below. Where goes the wave when it hits the shore? What thinks the particle as it's rushing to the core? We will keep dancing through tomorrow, like lovers spinning in the air. Oh, where can we be free? If to be free means learning not to care. Where goes the wave when it hits the shore? What thinks the particle as it's rushing to the core? We will keep dancing through tomorrow, like lovers spinning.
That was Where from Evolution, the new album by Sheryl Crow. She's our guest today on Sheroes, and I'm Carmel Holt. The strings are just gorgeous on this track.
Oh my gosh.
Rob Moose is a magician of the highest
caliber.
He is
a magician. He's like the man behind the curtain.
The man behind the curtain. Exactly. Exactly. So I wanted to talk a little bit about this moment in your career. You just had this major moment of getting inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. There was the Sheryl documentary, 30th anniversary of your debut album, Tuesday Night Music Club. It's a reflective time, naturally. And I wanted to hear a little bit about what that journey has been like for you, looking back in the rearview mirror, what you have discovered or rediscovered about you, your music, and especially about, for the purposes of Sheroes, where things have progressed and where we might still need to do some work for women in this industry.
Yeah. Well, we did the documentary during COVID, and it was not something I really wanted to do, but I kind of got talked into it by my manager, who is my manager, but is also a big fan. And he said, you know, you have so many stories to tell that women will relate to. And I hired a woman to do it who was fantastic. And I think what she chose as being the stories that should be followed in my documentary, I think we're spot on. There's probably 10 other documentaries that could have been made. And when you hire a director, you basically put your faith in them and then you let go of it because it's their perspective. I think my story is the story of a young girl who was raised to think that if you worked hard and you were a nice person, that things worked out for you. And along the way, there were a lot of things I had to learn and unlearn about that. And now I'm able to look back on 40 years of being in the business. I started out as a school teacher in St. Louis. I moved to LA, did some session work, went on the road with Michael Jackson. And from that moment, I think my learning curve really started to form, and it wasn't pleasant. You know, I endured a lot of sexual harassment. I tried to get help, and that fell on deaf ears. We are now starting to see that with the Me Too movement, that anyone that tries to pull that off is at risk of having the woman be believed. And that is a very good thing. Obviously, we still have a long way to go. When I was coming up too, like I said, women weren't producing themselves. They're basically being told what to wear, and you know, the videos could sexualize you, or, you know, as I said, most of what was happening was very Svengali, where everybody that worked in the business side of it were male. I find that to still be somewhat true, but maybe not as overbearing as it was, because women now are bigger than the business. I mean, when you have women like Taylor and Beyonce, who are bigger than even the industry itself, there aren't very many men that can tower over that. It was the nature of the yin and the yang and the power struggle, and men know more than women and women are the weaker. You know, all of those old outlooks about things have changed, but we still are fighting for what we believe we deserve, you know, equal pay, that kind of thing. We're still trying to get women to be interested in working at the board and mixing and being promoters, you know, all of that. We have a ways to go with that, but I would say that we've come a long way. And I'm very, very blessed that I came up when I came up, because I got to become an artist along the way without the scrutiny of YouTube and cell phones. And, you know, I feel for the young artists now that not only have to compete in a world of so much coming out, but also have to wield a brand, create a brand in order to sell their art. And that I find to be, you know, problematic. And at some point, I think things are definitely changing. At some point that will, you know, probably have to fix itself.
How did you handle your own presentation, image, all of those pressures to be like you said, sexualized or be even just under the male gaze.
It's really, really funny. Like, I look at my records and I go, okay, the first album cover, I'm like, hi, I'm Cheryl. I'm in a jean shirt and I'm like girl next door. The next album, after I'd kind of gotten beaten up, I'm like black eye makeup. Don't F with me, you know, like punk. Like I said, I'm glad I'm not coming up as an artist now because there's so much more scrutiny on that. Although I think women control much more their image than when I was coming up, where it was controlled by the business people. You know, I had some growing pains when I was coming up. And at a certain point, you step back and go, okay, wait a minute. Who am I and why am I? And then you go from there. And being diagnosed with breast cancer was definitely a game changer. After that, it was like, no, 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 no. This is my career, it's my life, and I will do what I want. And, you know, sometimes it takes that to get to that place where you say, I am the most valuable person in my business.
There was a moment when I was watching you talk about Bonnaroo and like being a legacy artist and
yes,
how that feels. And one of the missions of Shiro's is to be as cross-genre, cross-generational as possible,
nice,
to speak to women and hear their perspectives throughout their decades. I'm proud to say that I've had everyone from like a snail mail, Lindsay Jordan, who is like just barely into her 20s, all the way up to like a Wanda Jackson and Bonnie Raitt.
And,
you know, these women that have really, you know, but it's also, it saddens me that there's not as many women on that end of the lifespan for me to talk to.
Just so we're still doing it. And
we're not yet at that place where we have a plethora of women with very long and vital careers. And ageism is still very much alive in that way.
Yeah, it's a really weird thing. Well, the Bonnaroo thing is funny because, yes, I started being called a legacy artist. I'm like, oh my God, I must be so old, right? So when I played Bonnaroo, I think I was 50-something, right?
Right.
And at 3 in the afternoon, there was like nobody. And when I walked out at 5, there was 85,000 people. But there was a moment where I was like, what if nobody comes, you know? And we go out and we play, and it was just euphoric, all these young people singing every word because they'd grown up with it or whatever. But yeah, it's challenging for me, and my manager has to hear about it ad nauseum. But for artists like me, like Emmy Lou Harris, who, you know, I called her 10 years ago and said, you are writing your greatest stuff ever. And you give me so much hope. I mean, the Daniel Lanois record that she made, which was not, I mean, it wasn't even, it was like later in her career. I said, that just gives me so much optimism about what is ahead for me. And I do feel like as we get older, we write more. Like, I love this record. I'm very proud of it. I feel like I'm a better songwriter than I've ever been. And yet, I can't get arrested. That is the reality of it. You cannot compete with social media and the young people. You cannot compete with the brands of sexuality. Yeah, I'm not going to wear a triangle. Sorry. I'm not going to bare my breasts. I'm not going to have 100 million followers. And that is what equates with the success of some of the young women that are out there. But I would say this, and it is something that I do think about it. I also think I'm very blessed in the fact that I'm still doing it. And what kind of career do you have after your beauty does start to crack and you do get, you know, the lines on your face and the plastic surgery doesn't look so great anymore? And it's, I want to say to women, empower yourself with words and with beauty and with acceptance and compassion. And I know all of that sounds woo-woo, but at the end of the day, what we model is where our power is. What we model as feminists who stand up and say, my power is not in my looks, it's not in my body. It is the art that I'm putting out. It is the experience that I'm documenting that all of us are experiencing. And I can do that. I'm 62. I can continue to do that. I have to be okay with only a small percentage of people hearing it, as opposed to the old days when the record would come out and we'd sell 3-4 million, you know. It's disappointing, obviously, but it is the nature of all things now. We're so hypercritical about how women look. We put so much emphasis and so much power and also so much money into the influence of women who are perfect and beautiful and who wield that. I will forever have questions about where does it fit into the feminist movement, but I'm older. You know, I was around for the burning of the bras. I was around for the cigarette ad, you know, we've come a long way, baby, or whatever. I look at it now and I go, okay, so where is the power if the brand is bigger than the art? And those are questions I can't answer, but I can observe and I can write about it. You know, that's the best I can do.
Right, because that was going to be my follow-up was like, so what would you say to a young woman who already feels like the clock is ticking and time is running out for her at
I will say I'm very, I'm very, very blown away by how many amazing young artists there are out there. They might not be massive. Well, some of them are. I mean, Boy Genius, Phoebe Bridgers, Larkin Poe, Haim. I mean, women who play, who write, who have an opinion, who stand up. To me, I'm like, okay, so there's room for everything. There will always be, and there has always been, different genres within genres. You know, I think the one thing about social media and the one thing about streaming services is genres of music matter much less. Formats matter much less because honestly, radio plays what's getting the most streams. So you can say it's country or it's rock or it's R&B or it's hip hop or whatever. But if you're talking about streaming and downloads and that kind of thing, formats seem to matter less and less. Yeah, there's amazing female musicianship out there. I mean, Olivia Rodrigo, when she first played me your record, I was like, you are just like the grandchild of the breeders. You're a little badass, you know, write and play and wield all that energy. And so there's so much good stuff out there that is music first, or actually maybe is music and brand. So it's, you know, there's room for everything.
We have Sheryl Crow with us on Shiro's. The new album is Evolution. Let's go to another song here. I have a favorite, if you don't mind.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Love Life.
Oh.
Featuring Wendy of Wendy and Lisa.
Wendy and Lisa. Yes.
And it's been so thrilling to, I know you had a relationship with Prince. You collaborated with him. And I just wanted to take a moment to talk about bringing Wendy into this album. I love to see also that Wendy and Lisa are having a moment with Joni Mitchell and this whole Joni Jam thing.
Yes, and Brandy. I mean, Brandy's another one. I just go, you know, it's amazing if you are able to, you know, wield all of that, that beauty, that love, that respect for artists who paved the way. I mean, Brandy does it so beautifully and so brilliantly. And bringing out Annie Lennox and bringing out Wendy and Lisa and but also having young artists, you know, who are amazing in their own right. It's really fun to watch that. But yeah, the song Love Life, actually, Mike and I wrote 20 years ago. And I had the track and I said, dude, we got to finish this. We just have to. I'd had it for so long and loved it so much that I couldn't figure out how to fit words on it. And so we finally finished it. And actually, Wendy played on the original. In fact, I was texting with her yesterday and I sent it to her and she's like, oh my God, I can't believe that I remember that. So yeah, 20 years ago. And we used the track from 20 years ago.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah, yeah. And she's, you know, she played on My Favorite Mistake. So it's fun. You know, as you get older, you become really, really, you feel very precious about the relationships you've made. The people who are still doing it, you know, you feel like, okay, we've been through all the angsty years and here we are, older and wiser and filled with more gratitude than ever, you know. So it's really, really fun.
When we were young, we sipped strawberry wine. Me and my friend would cross the Tennessee line. Fake IDs and some
Love Life by Sheryl Crow. The new album is Evolution. Sheryl's our guest today on Shiro's, and I'm Carmel Holt. We'll be right back. Grammy Award winner Aoife O'Donovan's new album, All My Friends, is available now on Yep Rock Records. All My Friends is a collection of songs Aoife wrote inspired by women's suffrage and the passage of the 19th Amendment. Aoife used letters written by one of the leaders of the movement, Carrie Chapman Catt, juxtaposed with Aoife's own experiences as a woman and mother to create a modern, personal perspective on being a woman in America. Produced by Aoife O'Donovan, the album includes special guests the San Francisco Girls Chorus, Anais Mitchell, The Knights, The Westerlies, and Sierra Hull. Catch Aoife O'Donovan on her 2024 tour starting in May. I feel like you're a real relationship person. Am I getting that right? Like, you've had the same collaborators essentially around you for such a long time. That's a real achievement. And I mean, for any relationship to stand the test of time, but certainly in this crazy business.
Yeah, I would say I've been very blessed. You know, I've had the same people around me from the very beginning. My manager's been with me for 35 years, my agent, my, you know, business manager. I mean, everybody has been with me forever and ever. And we've all grown up together, basically. We've gone through the angsty years. We're all sort of like, oh, wow, haven't we seen a lot, you know? And we all feel very grateful. But same with artists. I feel like the people that I've gravitated to, there was a reason for it, you know, some cosmic reason that we resonated or vibrated at the same level, whatever woo-woo thing you want to throw in there. But I think I just tend to gravitate to people who see me and I see and we see each other. And, you know, if years go by and we don't see each other, when we get back together, it's like no time has passed. And I have a lot of those relationships. And the more I get to, as I get older, collaborate with some of these people, the more sacred it feels and the more blessed I feel.
What are some of your most treasured relationships that you have with other women in the business? And is that important to you?
Oh my gosh. I mean, honestly, having women, I can't imagine having a career where I didn't have women that supported me or women that I could support. You know, I grew up wanting to emulate Linda Ronstadt and Stevie Nicks. And Stevie is one, in fact, I'm working on a track of hers right now, who literally brought me to the table. You know, she mythically reached me. And then when I got to know her, she embraced me. And she's been a lifeline and a long, long time friend and collaborator and someone that, you know, she sets the bar. She's a true artist who sees things and is constantly journaling or painting, or she's just a fully realized artist. And to be able to be that for a younger artist and getting to know some of these artists like Brandy or Olivia or Maren Morris or Allison Russell or Lucius, it's fun to be able to kind of sit back like the mama bear and, you know, pat them a little and say, yes, you're onto it, you're onto it. And because we need each other, you know, art is a feminine energy. It is the energy that our planet, we call Mother Earth, Mother Earth, because the planet is a feminine energy, you know, and it sustains life, and we need to sustain, and we bring life. So it's all intertwined. It is all connected. And the quicker we realize that and embrace that, the more whole and the more joy-filled, or the more we can embrace our own joy and own it and own what we contribute, you know, the more contented and happy and able to support other people we can be. And that's really been my journey. You know, I've had people in the beginning who believed in me and who are still here.
What piece of advice did you receive as a young woman from another woman, or even just from a distance piece of advice that you learned from another woman when you were coming up that was the most impactful on you that you carry with you? And
yeah,
what is the piece of advice that you find yourself imparting onto young women that you encounter now in music?
There's one that really sticks out for me that was a little bit like having a chiropractor take me and my art and give us an adjustment. And it was Chrissy Hynde. I was in the studio in New York and I'd been working on this record. It was the record after Globe Sessions. It ultimately wound up being the Come On, Come On record. And you know, I'd just been going at this pace for years and, you know, tour for a year, be gone for a year, year and a half, promoting a record and touring and then come home, make a record and then do the same thing. And I had, you know, it was just like 7 or 8 years back to back of never taking a break. And I could not finish anything. I had $1 million into this record already and had not finished it. And I was literally pulling my hair out. And this is obviously before home studios. And I ran into her in a studio in New York and wound up talking to her. And she's like, what's going on? And I told her, and she's just like, you need to realize, and the sooner you realize this, the happier you'll be, that your music is not your life. Your life is your life, and music is something you do in your life. And if you take off time away from music, you will still have your music whenever you come back to it. And she told me about how she had her kids, and she took 8 years away to raise her kids, and she came back to it. And I think it took that, having somebody say, and somebody with that kind of experience say, you have earned the break and you deserve the break. And unless you take the break, you really will have very little to write about. And that was really true for me. I mean, I needed to go out and live a little and experience some life in order to come back and have anything to say. And so I did. I took off a year, didn't do anything. I hung out, and it was great. And when I came back to finish the record, you know, I zipped it right up. And I've embraced that ever since, where I've taken time off and just thought, you know what? It's all going to be there when I get done.
And how about now, what you would say to a young artist like an Olivia Rodrigo, but even somebody that was just starting out?
Well, I mean, there are several things I would say. And I think some of these young artists are a lot more savvy and a lot wiser than I was. But it took me putting out a couple of records before I learned that reading your reviews or what people had to say about you was damaging. I think one of the things that already is a pre-existing condition in artists is that you're overly sensitive. And then you could get a great review, but it's got like two negative comments. Like, I didn't like what she wore, and her hair was, her part wasn't straight. And that's all you think. That's all you can internalize. And it took me a long time to realize that people have opinions, and sometimes those opinions are based on their experience, and sometimes their opinions are based on how they feel about themselves or a preconceived notion about you. And it's just good if you stay in the art and stay out of everything that's outside of that art. And I have told people that, you know, with social media, it's tricky to not go on and look at your comments. But hopefully, I think a lot of these young artists are savvy to that already and know that a lot of what gets written is just hate. And then the other thing is, you know, I find that for me, the joy is in the process. And I feel even at this age, at 62, I'm becoming a better songwriter. I'm becoming a better band leader. I'm becoming a better performer. I'm becoming a better producer. I'm becoming a better representative of myself. And that to me is where the excitement and the joy and the optimism is. And so I, you know, when young artists ask me, I always say, stay into the process. Listen to the greats. You know, listen to all the wonderful songs that came out of Motown and Stax and all the right stuff, and just be into the craft. And then when you go in to write your heart, you have a huge platform to stand on. And that's really what's helped me through the years.
Cheryl, it's been such an honor to have you here. We only have a couple minutes left, and I want to make sure that we leave time for the Shiro's Magic Wand Wish. Are you ready?
Oh, my gosh. Okay, yes.
So, Sheryl Crow, my Shiro, if I were to give you the Shiro's magic wand and say, Sheryl Crow, with this magic wand, you possess the power to change anything in the music industry for women and non-binary people, what would you change? First wave of the wand.
Oh my gosh, it's so hard. I mean, I'm going to sound really old. And I will say, and I've said it before, my kids say I was born in the 1870s. I think for women, for non-binary, for every woman out there who is an artist, the one thing that I would change is the expectation on women. I would encourage a system that is not based on anything other than the energy that we put out. Now, that is a very idealized idea, but I think if we could take the social media and the 6-second attention span out of it, that perhaps everything would be softer and gentler, and it would create more space for more art to just be flowing. I know that sounds kind of nebulous, but I guess the end-all be-all for me would be for people to still be able to hear a whole song and experience it, as opposed to just the 6 seconds and all the minutiae that goes around it.
Sheryl Crow, thank you so much for being with us on Shiro's. I could talk to you for hours.
Oh, Carmel, thanks for having me. Love being on it. I love, and all those women out there, man, keep on rocking on in the free world, to quote Neil Young.
Which song should we go out with today?
I want you to go out with a song that sort of started the whole process. I am a person that has talked ad nauseum about my mental health challenges, and this song meant so much to me. I did not write the song. It's called Digging in the Dirt, and it just meant so much to me as I was going through last year a lot of digging to find joy, to find peace, to find levity. And then, lo and behold, after we did the song, we sent it to Peter Gabriel, and he loved it and added in. So I'm happy to play this. And I'm going to encourage everybody to dig deep and come up with joy.
Something in me, dark and sticky. All the time it's getting strong. No way of dealing with this feeling. Can't go on like this too long.
With thanks to Sheryl Crow. Thank you for being with us on Shiro's. What a pleasure.
Thanks, Carmel. Thanks for having me.
Massive thanks once again to Sheryl Crow for being with us. Her 12th studio album, Evolution, is out now on Big Machine Records. Shiro's is produced by me, is mixed and mastered by Kelly Drake. Our original theme music is by Lucius. Shiro's is also a nationally syndicated radio show. You can visit shirosradio.com to find out more and support our work with Patreon or merch from the Shiro's shop. Keep in touch on Instagram and Twitter. I'm at Carmel Holt, or find us at Shiro's Radio. And please consider leaving us a rating and review wherever you listen to your podcast. That helps us grow and bring you more Shiro's. Until next time, remember, music is our superpower. I'm Carmel Holt. Thanks for listening. Support for Shiro's comes from Yet Brock Records, celebrating the new album from Aoife O'Donovan, All My Friends, available everywhere. See her live on her 2024 tour starting in May.